flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry and get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Listening to the best of the Browns.
Ball game over! Browns win! Browns win!
A weekly mix of 92.3 The Fan's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
All right, we have somebody at the Senior Bowl. He could tell us once and for all how these quarterbacks look right now. Appearing on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, Zach Jackson. Zach, from The Athletic, Ken started the show today trashing Milroe.
I didn't trash him.
You eviscerated
him. I didn't trash him. I said, no, we're not taking him. Don't call in with him.
So, Zach, your turn. Do you want to trash Milroe right now?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to trash anybody, you know, based on one day, but it's not looking good, and that's just how it goes. You know, when I got here Monday and walked in the convention center, they're on the hallway, in the hallway of the convention center, taking snaps and throwing 6-yard passes because these guys have never met, right? They've never met the guys coaching them. They haven't played football in a month or 2 months. So it's ugly. So we'll see over the next couple of days. You know, I think Jalen Milroe is going in the first round. I do. That's what people who I trust have said.
Whoa!
That's what they believe.
Sorry.
Wow, Zach.
Is he ready to win? Is he the right pick? You know, I don't know any of that, but really we're not the ones making the pick. So I don't think he's a realistic candidate at number 2 overall, but I do believe he's going in the first round. And, you know, in a month or so, we'll have a better idea if that's in the top 10 or in the top, you know, 30.
You're scaring me.
Well, Ken, I mean, it's like this. A quarter of the league conservatively needs a quarterback, right?
Yeah.
The free agent class is awful. And you have people on the record saying that none of this year's quarterbacks would be in the top 6 of last year's. So you got to learn to love somebody. And Andrew Berry did say yesterday that you don't necessarily have to love somebody at 2. I get where he's coming from. I still think they do, and I still think they will. But, you know, if you spend your time picking out all these flaws, then you're just really going to make yourself miserable ahead of going 6-11 next year.
You always find a way. Zach Jackson. Stop it. I'm getting over a sickness here. Zach Jackson joining us from The Athletic. So, like, if the Browns, like, is this one of the things, like, okay, I could see the Browns picking him and it would be okay? Or you're like, yeah, I could see the Browns picking him and being the Browns?
Well, I think it depends on how they do it, Ken. You know, who is the veteran that comes in and kind of obviously appears to be the opening day, opening month, opening X amount of month starter? How do they go forward with offensive tackle and with upgrading the skill pieces? And then what really are your options? You know, could you take a phenomenal player, an Abdul Carter, a Travis Hunter, someone else early, and then trade back in the bottom of the first round the way the Ravens did to get Lamar Jackson? Could you do that? You know, could you just trade down a few spots and still get your guy? Or do you have to take that? All of that stuff, they're being figured out. You know, when they leave here tonight or tomorrow, they'll have personally met with every quarterback in the draft class except for Cam Ward and Quinn Ewers. Both of those guys were in college for a long time. They have a direct connection to Cam Ward through Glenn Cook, who was the captain of the University of Miami. You know, both of those guys have played in big games for multiple seasons, especially Ewers. So they're going to have a pretty good feel, and then you just start getting into what's available to you and what you think the best plan is. And I think part of the thing here, you know, Andrew comes out and says on the record, we're not trading Myles Garrett. That's just reaffirming. But if there really is a trade market for that number two pick because someone really wants Travis Hunter or really wants Shedeur Sanders, then these are the conversations. This is when those conversations would kind of start.
Zach Jackson with us. We know that there's lip service every year, like the new GM in Tennessee talking about generational talent at one, not going to pass on that. That had a lot of people talking. Whether or not Shedeur Sanders has a guarantee among the first three teams. What should we pay attention to when it comes to all this stuff surrounding these players?
You know, that's a great question, because even when you get to March and it's private workout season and pro day season and all of that, I mean, if teams want to smoke screen, they can smoke screen. And if a team really values a guy, whether it's a quarterback or one of those defensive or combo players, enough to trade up, that's not going to go public. They're not going to publicly leverage that. So, you know, when the 2 years ago when they made the trade for Bryce Young, it was done early, right? I think the Bears always knew that pick was up for auction, and it was done a month or so ahead of the draft. So, you know, what you pay attention to, I don't know. I guess it's kind of your own flavor. Yeah, as things get solidified and as we find out what happens for sure with Geno Smith, with Derek Carr, you know, who's going to be more desperate or maybe most desperate to come up? And, you know, I'm not stunned, I guess, with this Abdul Carter love, because he did look phenomenal and pass rush is a premium position. But ultimately, just with not enough quarterbacks to go around, I think somebody's going to have to love these guys, and maybe the price can go up if the Browns aren't one of the teams that loves them.
What would you do, Zach, as far as the draft?
I would take a quarterback, because I just think you just have to operate like you're not going to be here again, like it is the most important position. And their actions in the past have shown us that they believe that. And I think you have to take that shot. So I just am not thrilled with trying to patch it together with a Kirk Cousins or something like that. So, you know, I think the quickest way to get back to respectability is to hit on one of these veterans on their second or third try and see if he can get you that and you can get everything else to click. But I think in the long term, I think you have to get the right guy. And I just think when you look at what they're facing in their own division with Burrow and Lamar, let alone around the rest of the AFC in the league, I think you have to try to get that guy. And that's the only way you're ever going to be at the top. So, you know, this is the question. Where in or near the middle is good enough for these guys a year from now? Because we know the cap situation isn't good. We know the pipeline of young talent is pretty dry. So, you know, you can argue, and I'm sure everybody does every day, about how many wins it's going to take or what it's going to look like. You have to nail some draft classes, and specifically you have to have the right quarterback going forward coming out of 25, or else it's another complete blow up. Again,
All right, Zach Jackson with us from The Athletic. Let me summarize what we've heard over the last week from our callers about Shedeur Sanders. Cleveland cannot possibly be the right environment for him. He's going to be a circus. His dad's going to be a circus, a distraction. He's too small. Nepotism. If he had another last name, he wouldn't even be up for number two pick overall. But you get to talk to evaluators. You're around scouts, and you're down there right now talking to people. What is fair and what is unfair about Shedeur Sanders?
I think a lot of it is on both sides. But, look, he has a skill set that translates to the NFL. He turns 23, I think, next week. He's been starting at quarterback in, for 8 years in winning. He's been dealing with the spotlight for 23 of those years. We laugh at Pat Shurmur here for good reason. He was coached by an NFL coach, a Hall of Fame dad. They added a defensive coordinator last year, spent 15 years with the Bengals, has been at the highest level. And to me, the good Shedeur on tape is good. The bad's pretty bad. So I think you can get caught up in what you choose to get caught up in, and I think people are scarred by things of the past. And when you look at the quarterback circus that's been here in Cleveland and some of the things that have come off of it off the field, I understand people are concerned there. But, you know, none of us can affect what the thinking is or what the options are. And so short of the Raiders or someone else offering a bounty to offer the Browns to get out of that, like, you might have to take him or Cam Ward. And so I just think you have to focus on the positives there. Cam Ward turns it over too much. Well, he's electric when he's good. You know, people are worried that Deion might tweet if the Browns have if Shedeur has a bad game or their coach has a bad game. Well, the coach has a bad game all the time. Like, you eventually have to get a guy. That to me almost feels like in the dregs of that 3-year run when it was like every time you talked about a draft pick or a free agent, people would be like, well, that'll never work here. Like, eventually you have to get past that and say you're going forward. And the Browns completely bombed with the worst, most embarrassing trade in NFL history at quarterback. Right?
Yes.
So they have to get a quarterback to go forward.
What about the argument that they don't want the Shedeur Sanders circus here?
Again, I as much as I can answer that, because I don't know. I've never been in the same room with a kid. I don't know what it's really like. It's on them to figure it out. So he's cocky on Twitter. Like, that makes him every other 23-year-old, right? Especially ones who are really good. And I think the fact that he's grown up in it, and in the way he's raised levels of programs, I think those are positives. Is he really an a-hole behind the scenes? I have no idea, and that's for the Browns to decide.
I know we have to use our time wisely, and there are other quarterbacks to talk about too, but I did want to ask you, since you were there and you were one of those asking the questions, do you think that Andrew Berry, entering year 6 of his NFL GM tenure, being asked about whether or not he's going to trade Myles Garrett, you think that was one of the low points of his career, thinking he'd be asked that heading into year 6?
I understand where you're going with that, but no, because I think it was Myles who chose to take his frustrations publicly, right? And I think there's consequences of a 3-14 season, and there's a lot of hope. And so you can look at the Browns being in position to fix it and saying they're good enough to run it back, that no way will ever go as poorly as last year. And you can also say they're a 3-win team that's $30 million over the cap. And so every question's in play. And of course, like, he kept his job, so he's got to fix it or he's not going to keep his job.
Zach Jackson joining us here. He's joining us live from Mobile, Alabama on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. I'm just a little bit afraid about the whole "you said Jalen Milroe in the first round" thing, because I could just see myself having to eat the words on draft night and get a bunch of cuss out texts.
Well, there's 2 full months, right? Or 3 full months.
Yeah.
Today is what? Yeah. 3 full months, I think, from tomorrow.
Yeah.
12 weeks from tomorrow is the draft. So a lot of conversation will go. That will come out. I mean, Jalen Milroe is a super impressive kid from my impression here. And 4 years at Alabama, 2 years as a starter prepares you. And I think his natural gifts are why people are sure he's going in the first round. But to what system and at what number and where he is, I think we'll all start to figure that out, and we'll see. But, I mean, you know, I think it's pretty good information that he's going in the first.
How closely are they paying attention to the offensive linemen down there at the Senior Bowl? Like, this is, you know, some people say, well, we got to retool this offensive line. I'm like, well, yes and no, but there is – I mean, there's no more guaranteed money left on a couple of these contracts. We don't know whether or not Joel Bitonio is going to come back. Like, we could be looking at some different names in that lineup next year.
No, it's way more yes than no, Ken. I mean, even if they bring back the three interior linemen, they all expire next year. They don't have a left tackle. And then they have a right tackle who they can't afford right now. And because the guarantees are paid, he doesn't really have to come back to them if they ask him to take less money. Mm. So there's no about it, right? So, yeah, I mean, like, look, the entire top of the scouting staff is here. Almost every team has their GM here. Some head coaches. Kevin is here because they're on the quarterback search. But, you know, this is where you do a lot of work and you see guys and you start to get to the next phase. So the next phase for the Browns is the heaviest draft meetings in February, which is, you know, all the football's been played, all the All-Star games have been played, some of the interviews have been done. And then, because really after that, all you're waiting on is the medicals from the combine and the in-person impressions with guys are still that. Like, and that will change some things, but it won't change the overall grades. Like, they're going to know or they're going to leave here believing in their data, where they think the strengths are, what they have to do. And, yeah, I mean, look, this team has a lot of holes. Like, to not have a quarterback or a left tackle or enough skill players before you even get to the defensive side, it's hard. But, yeah, the offensive line to me is really one of the priorities for the next 3 months and really the next 15 months if this team's going to get back on track.
Hey, Zach, is Will Howard really, like in real life, is he moving up the draft board or are we getting carried away as this Buckeye fandom run amok?
No, I think he has to be, Anthony, right? I mean, he just played so much better at the end of the year than he did. And those are the biggest evaluations you could get, high-stakes games. So I think he is. It's disappointing that he's not here, but nobody's holding it against him. Everybody understands. And then, you know, he's got a month or so to get himself ready for the combine. And I don't know whether he'll throw there. But, you know, as far as interviewing and saying and you know, talking to teams about how far he's come and how accurate he could be, yeah, I mean, I heard Daniel Jeremiah talking about him and singing his praises. And from what I look at this class, you know, where I don't know what happens after Milroe, and I don't know if Milroe goes 12 or 32, I think Will Howard could continue to rise, and I think it's real. And you know, we'll see after the Combine and Pro Day just how real it is.
Do you like him?
I do. I do. I've never been – again, I don't know a ton about him. I know he was in college for a long time, and he actually was invited to the Senior Bowl last year. Jaden Daniels declined the invitation, and the Senior Bowl called Will Howard and said, "We'd like to have you." And he said, I'm flying to Columbus right now. I'm actually deciding to go back to school." So, but I don't know how big he really is. I don't know where he is in his progression as a passer, all of those things. But certainly everybody's going to take a look. And, you know, if in the high second round, that could be where the Browns are. It's not what I advocate. I'm not saying I know that, but the Browns absolutely could be there with their quarterback selection.
Damn it, Zach. I'm thinking, man, if they go out and they get one of these vets, they don't have to start them off. And I can't find anybody to tell me everything I want to hear about all these other quarterbacks. And then I look at him and I go, all right, like there's experience, there's leadership, yeah. There's winning. And I'm like, hey, when all else fails, I'm going to lean back on that and I'm going to give that guy a try, especially at 6'4", 235. Listed, allegedly.
Yeah, right. Now, all of these guys were close here at the Senior Bowl. All of them were close to their listed weights. And Milroe was a little under, and then, of course, had the small hands, which I'm sure you guys will missed arguing about on the radio. But they were all there. So if he's near that, then that's a positive, and we'll see. But all of these guys are experienced. You know, these top guys, they all had 4-plus years of college. The multiple stops thing isn't a red flag anymore because everybody does it. And for quarterbacks, it's seen as a plus. They transfer up. They play in big games. And Will Howard's big game resume right now is better than anybody else's.
Jackson Dart, yes or no?
No right now, but again, I've seen him for one day. So before we go, can I tell you what I'm most excited for, Ken?
Please, yes, sir.
About 4 years from now, we're driving out to the new stadium in Brook Park, right? And you look over the billboard on 480, and it's Anthony Lima for reverse vasectomies. I just can't wait for that.
Oh, my God in heaven.
You can do that?
Oh, my God.
How long you've been waiting for that since last week, ain't you?
Yeah, I had a lot of time in the airport on Monday to set that one up.
All right. I can't believe you actually went through with it. I thought he was not going to do it.
Well, I'm proud of him in many fronts. So.
sparing Northeast Ohio in the community. Hey, anybody? Does anybody like Kyle McCord?
That's a great question. Oh. You know, I certainly don't. I guess it'd be like my second or third time being wrong. But yeah, I think the reality is, Anthony, like, people are going to like these quarterbacks, and people are going to draft them in rounds 2, 3, and 4, and then what's going to really become of them, right? Because we've seen that happen before, and nobody knows. That's the thing about the draft. But look, I think the Browns might draft 2 quarterbacks. I think they might add 2 veterans. Like, they really have to attack this and try to get it right. And the number of appealing options or ideal options is like 0. So we got to figure out the best plan for trying to get one to hit and see where it might take you.
Zach Jackson from The Athletic, from down in Mobile, Alabama, live at the Senior Bowl. Zach, thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Zach Jackson on that North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Senior Bowl's going on. And I keep seeing videos of Jalen Milroe, and it's scaring the hell out of me. And they're all from Mary Kay Cabot, who joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Mary Kay, why do you like to scare me?
What scares you about Jalen?
Everything. I don't want to play a quarterback for my Cleveland Browns.
Well, here's something that you have to keep in mind about a player like Jalen. And I'm not saying that I have arrived at the point where I would say, yes, he's the guy that I would think about for the Cleveland Browns. But here's just something to remember, and this is important. When people left the pre-draft process in 2018, no one was thinking that Lamar Jackson was going to become a 2-time NFL MVP and maybe a 3-time NFL MVP. But, of course, that's exactly what happened with him. And when you're looking at a Jalen Milroe, you're looking sort of at a similar skill set. So the way that I look at it is, if you have wheels like that and you've got a really strong arm, which we know he has those two things, and then you pair that with processing speed, like really good processing speed. And that I don't know yet. I still have to do a lot of investigation to see how people feel about that or where he stands on that. But if you have those three things, you can work with the prospect. It's not about what they did. It's about what they can become. And so those are the things that you kind of have to think about.
Yeah, Mary Kay, I'm with you there. I mean, the fact that anybody assumes all of these prospects are like finished products, that's just not how this works. Obviously, players can grow a ton, and it's up to the front office to figure that out. I think what's hard for a lot of fans to envision here is that somebody like Milroe, who looks like a total project, yet you still have people that suggest he could be a first-round draft pick. That's the hard part, I think, for some fans, knowing that not only do we have number 2, but we have the top pick of the second round. And to get somebody like Milroe, you'd be thinking about probably having to trade up at the end of the first round to get him.
Well, that's probably true, because I do think that someone is going to look at those traits. And I did talk to his private quarterbacks coach, Jordan Palmer, last week, and I wrote a story about that. Someone's going to look at these traits, and they're going to see Lamar Jackson, and they're going to see the possibilities and the vision. And if they do that and they feel that way and they feel they can commit to the bit, then somebody's probably going to end up taking him in the first round. Why not take a flyer on a player like that in the first round and see what you can make of him or what you can do with him? You could do a lot worse in the first round than a developmental quarterback who has those kind of traits.
Just because the Browns have done a lot worse in the first round than taking a quarterback with developmental traits doesn't mean that we should just take him, Mary Kay. That's a joke. You're supposed to chuckle.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm laughing inside.
Oh, God. Hate it when a joke don't kill. All right. Mary Kay.
No, it's just, you just can't look at these guys and say, oh, I didn't like what I saw on film in this game or that game. It's about what they're going to do when they get into a system, what they're going to do when they get with a good quarterbacks coach and in a building where you're going to be using all of your resources, including AI and virtual reality and all of those different things. So you have to project and you have to see what it's going to be a year or two from now.
Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I got another quarterback to ask you about from down there, and then I got a conspiracy theory to run by you. Jackson Dart, how's he looking down there? It seemed a lot of people are excited. Jim Nagy, he said a lot of people were blowing up his phone when they found out he was going to be down there.
That is true. People are very excited about him, and he has looked pretty good. The thing that Jim Nagy also said about him was the fact that, you've got to be able to see him throw into tight windows. So I asked Jackson Dart about that yesterday, and he fully 100% believes that that's not going to be an issue for him, that that's the next level that he has to take his game to and prove that he can do that, and he's already doing it some down here. Talked to Bubba about him yesterday. He was very impressed with him as well. And both of these quarterbacks that we're talking about, from a character standpoint and a personality standpoint, you guys would really, really like them. Browns fans would really, really like them. Lots of good leadership characteristics, just good, really good personalities. So I think that's important, too, when you're trying to build a culture and, have someone in your building that's going to sort of, everyone will follow him.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us on the show. So I want you to hear this audio. This is Deion Sanders, audio courtesy of CBS Colorado, talking about Bill Musgrave.
My favorite Super Bowl memory is a guy named Billy Musgrave, who was our scout team quarterback. Great player on his own right, but he played on the scout. We had Steve Young, NFL MVP, offensive MVP. Billy worked his butt off, prepared us, really got us right, but he never played because of Steve Young. So during the Super Bowl, we're kicking San Diego's butt. And I go to George Seifert and I say, put Billy in. And he looked at me like, I said, no, man, put Billy in. And he put Billy in. And Billy got to throw a pass and Billy got to play in the Super Bowl. And that's my fondest memory, man. That's really my fondest Super Bowl memory, that Billy got to play, man.
So the Browns have made decisions within their coaching staff before around their quarterback. It's not like it's crazy. They've moved Bill Musgrave up to quarterback coach. Can I start to read some tea leaves that that might be because of Shedeur Sanders at number two? Mary Kay, what say you?
Well, if you want to start reading tea leaves, I think there are a lot of them. Certainly, that might be something to keep in mind or look into. But then you also have just the fact that they made Tommy Rees their offensive coordinator. And, of course, he coached Jalen Milroe at Alabama. So I think you can look for things. You can find things. You can try to find the conspiracy theories. And, in some cases, I think they're fitting and they're appropriate. And in other cases, there are just going to be some connections. When you've got a coach like Bill Musgrave, he's been everywhere, and he's got so many different connections. But certainly it wouldn't hurt for Deion to really like the quarterback's coach of the Cleveland Browns. And also, I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but I did ask Andrew Berry down here, do you think that Deion will be a problem? Do you think that that's going to be an issue with him playing for the Cleveland Browns? And he absolutely, unequivocally stated, I do not anticipate that being a problem, which tells me they've already had those discussions.
Mary Kay Cabot with us right now. As you are hearing all the rumors, we know how it is for a lot of the journalists to go down there, hobnob, maybe have a few drinks here and there. Mary Kay, what is your sense of how the top of this draft right now will go from some of the rumors that you are hearing, especially at number one? Are you hearing it's a foregone conclusion that Cam Ward goes number one?
No, I'm not. I keep hearing that the Titans are thinking about possibly trading the pick. That's one thing that I've heard a lot here. Cam Ward, people are, kind of wondering why he didn't participate in the Senior Bowl or the Shrine Bowl. So he's kind of in the background right now. I think I'm looking forward to doing more diligence on him and sort of figuring out what the situation is like there. But everyone seems pretty excited about their meetings with Shedeur at the Shrine Bowl. Who knows? Maybe the Titans want him. So, no, there's not a clear-cut number one in this draft. And I did also ask Andrew Berry that. Who do you think the Titans will take? And he said, I have no idea. And I don't think they know either right now.
Mary Kay, I didn't know anything about an assault charge with Abdul Carter until the afternoon show brought it up yesterday, and it's something he never got suspended for. So obviously Penn State didn't think it was that big of a deal. We were just talking at the start of the show how many situations the Browns have, you know, gotten themselves into by taking chances on players who have something in their past. Is that something you think the Browns will continue to take chances on? Do you think the Browns, given how some of their players have certainly been in trouble with the law, it would make them think, you know, make them think twice about going after somebody who has something in their past?
Well, I think that they will continue to take these things on a case-by-case basis, and if they feel like they can get a player into their building and he will not be a problem inside the organization or out in the community, then they will consider taking that player. If they think that once they get a player here, it's going to be a continuous round of problems going forward, then they would not want to take that player. So I think you just have to look at it, like I said, on a case-by-case basis. And you have to decide, is this player not a very good person, or was this a player who made a mistake in a bad situation and can overcome this, and it will be the last of that sort of thing?
Do you get a little bit worried about hearing about these things? Because, man, it seems like we keep getting burned in these situations.
Well, I think when you're taking someone at number two, in my opinion, you want the cleanest prospect that you can possibly find. So that's how I do feel about that. You don't want there to be too many question marks when you're going that high. The Browns haven't had a first-round pick in 3 years. They need to get this one right as best they possibly can. It's still a crapshoot in many cases. It's still incredibly difficult to get it right. But I do think that you want to avoid anything that's going to blow up in your face 3 months after the draft.
Say the Browns take a quarterback, number two overall. Say they finish the season 8-9 in 2025. Is that good enough for Jimmy Haslam to keep everybody employed and move on for 2026? Is around 500 good enough?
You know, we'll have to see. It depends. I mean, if you have a really promising, good, young rookie quarterback that worked through the kinks and some of the growing pains in his first season and won 8 games, and looked really good, ends up with a great rating and a bunch of touchdown passes and few interceptions, and everything's kind of humming along pretty well, then I think you move forward with that. So getting this right is imperative, and figuring out who your QB1 is for 2025 is vitally important.
Do you wonder if the fan base puts too much pressure on young quarterbacks here?
Well, that's everywhere. That is absolutely everywhere.
Really?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm in an airport right now.
It's okay.
But, that's universal. I think every team, every city puts a tremendous amount of pressure on young quarterbacks because they're expected to come in and win and play right away. So we'll have to see how all of that goes. And the other thing that I asked Andrew, can you predict if your starting quarterback in 2025 is going to be a veteran or a rookie? And he said no on that too. So there's a world in which they could sign Kirk Cousins or someone, and that quarterback, that veteran quarterback, could start at least in week one of the season. He also did say, and this was just a very small group interview. It was just three of us that were down there covering the Senior Bowl. And it was a really unique opportunity just to sit there with Andrew and ask him anything, basically. And he also said that he does believe that the Browns can find a starting quarterback in this rookie class, despite the fact that a lot of people, including Jim Nagy, don't think that this class can even hold a candle to 2024.
Mary Kay, we thank you very much for the time. All the best, and you know we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
He's Jeff Phelps. I'm Andy Baskin. 216-474-0092. That is the number to call in. Coming up in this hour, we will talk to Chris Rose. He'll join us at 1240. So we'll catch up with him. One of the things that came out of the Senior Bowl, and by the way, I'm going to be distracted here for a second.
No kidding.
Listen, the Senior Bowl, right? Here's the problem with the Senior Bowl. Ready? It's the logo. So, like, we always have it on here.
You know
where I'm going with
this? Yes, I know where you're going.
It made me think.
Did you go downstairs and buy some?
Yeah, I bought them yesterday. So it's the Reese's Cup, or Reese's Senior Bowl.
Reese's,
whatever. He can say whatever he wants. I don't care. last night, it like I think it
how
is,
were they? Were they good?
No. Here's what I did that was different. Do you know they make a popcorn too? It's like a Reese's Drizzle on popcorn.
Oh my!
And I was just picking up like I was covered
popcorn and chocolate and peanut butter.
Oh, it was so good.
I got peanut butter on my popcorn.
It was so good, and I'm telling you that I think subliminally they're sending me messages that I need to eat it.
Baskin.
Is that wrong? Or am I wrong? Am I crazy?
Eat some Reese's.
It totally like came out to me yesterday.
They used to have like bowls filled with them all over the place at the Senior Bowl, where you would just like walk by and grab one.
Like the minis or the?
I have never been to the Senior Bowl. I am passing this along from people who have told me such things, that they used to have bowls of them, and you could just grab a Reese's cup.
Along with tubs of aspirin, because, you know, with all the salt content, you got a headache.
So I've never been to the Senior Bowl, but I did work in college sports. I was at College Sports Nation at Sirius XM back when Phil Savage was
ding.
Sorry, I didn't mean to do that. But like, but because he was also a host on XM at the time, he would always send Reese's from the Senior Bowl.
Really?
And
we're on the same page. Ignore him. Ignore him.
I'm always going to say Reese's because that's
me too. Same as
but
yes.
What he would send, it was astronomical. It was if Hershey's made a version of this Reese's cup, because it's the Hershey's company,
right?
They had it, and Phil sent it. We had we didn't have like a closet, but our program director's desk was just piled high with Reese's that Phil had sent to the station.
I always thought he was a good guy, and that
now you've doubled down on it.
Used to live in the same apartment building as a friend of mine,
and
nice guy.
That's the story. He lived in. There's no stories about the apartment complex that you're about to drop some wisdom on us?
Nope.
Wow. That was like the ultimate tease.
It was back when he was a young pup with the Browns.
Andrew Berry is not going to trade Myles Garrett. What does that mean for the Browns? And is that a statement of saying we are close to contention because we are not going to trade him? Is that how you read into yesterday's message?
No.
How do you read into it?
They like having one of the best defensive players in the game on the defensive line, so they're not trading him. You're not going to get to where you want to be if you're looking for a defensive end to go along with a quarterback and everything else that you need. So you might as well keep the guy you already have under contract.
I think, one, as a fan, when you hear that, when you hear, okay, Andrew Berry says we're not going to trade Myles Garrett, I'm like, phew, okay, good. They've got a Hall of Fame player that they don't want to get rid of, that they believe in, and they believe he can anchor the defense moving forward.
You
right?
think he's a Hall of Famer?
I think he's going to be, yeah.
Me too.
Okay. But I also think that when you have talent, why would you want to give it up? And we know it sounded like he was a little disgruntled towards the end of the season, but then things seemed to simmer down. They must have had a conversation after he had... shown a little, it was a little disgruntled and wanted to know what direction the team was going on. And maybe that was something that may have kickstarted some conversations towards an extension in his contract, because that seems to be where they're going with this thing with him.
Or maybe it was a ploy just to get a contract extension. And or if maybe, it was, great, good
or,
for him.
Or maybe he was truly frustrated after a loss.
Which I can understand completely.
And we've seen...
He's out there busting his you-know-what, and it's not going anywhere.
The other part, too, is the Joe Thomas theory here. Like, do you want to be Hall of Famer like Joe Thomas that doesn't have any rings to go along with what you did, or, you know, this great playoff experience that, you know, led the team to a season that no one will ever forget and blah, 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 blah. We will never forget.
How's it go again?
Blah, 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 blah. But the key right now for Myles Garrett is that lasting implant in the back of your mind about him forever moving forward is his ability to get sacks, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So that is how we have embedded him into our minds. I'd like to embed that into my mind with saying, wow, he had all those sacks, and I'll never forget he was there for the Browns' first Super Bowl. He was there for the time they won that first Super Bowl, or they got to that first Super Bowl. Like, I think that's, you know, that's bigger than money. And I know we had this conversation yesterday about money, and really, is that ultimately why you're playing the game? I don't know. I think a lot of players have it because in their heart, they want to win a Super Bowl. They want to say, we were the best that ever walked down on the field. That I don't know if there's any money that can translate the same.
That was Roy Hobbs.
The best that ever was? But he got shot on his way doing it. That's the problem.
Oh, well.
So my question for you then is, do you think that the Browns are close to contention by what he's saying. I think what he's saying, and I think Jeff and I are on the same page for this, that what Andrew Berry's saying is we have a Hall of Fame talent. Why would we let that go at any price? If you want two draft picks, now you're putting it out there saying, well, we hope we could have two more Hall of Famers based on this one Hall of Famer, rather than hanging on to one Hall of Famer. And I'd rather hang on to the Hall of Famer. And then knowing that you have, again, four picks in the top 103, that maybe you can find that perfect complement to him on the other side of the line. Because that's where they are right now.
First-round draft history is littered with players who didn't reach their potential. This one did. Just put him at defensive end and let's go.
Is there any part of you that thinks that's a mistake? That Andrew's saying that, you know what? If somebody came up to you and said three first-round draft picks for him, now are you thinking?
Yeah, but nobody will.
The question that came up yesterday as they were talking to him was like, if somebody came up to you while you were eating lunch or dinner and said, hey, I'll give you two first-round draft picks for Myles Garrett, would you do it? He's like, no. So he kind of doubled down on the whole thing, saying, no, I'm not trading him. I don't want to trade him. I don't think there's a Browns fan that...
I just wouldn't take his words as like, okay, if you're a Myles fan and you want him here, I wouldn't take his words as, okay, good, he's going to be here. It's pro sports, folks. We all know what happens. Anything happens. And Myles might not... Let's say they try to negotiate a new contract, and it doesn't go well. Well, where's Amari Cooper now? Amari's in Buffalo.
Right, but okay. Amari's not Myles.
No, he's not. But, you know, the Browns wanted to keep Amari around and blah, 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 and he ended up getting traded. If by chance contract talks didn't go well, you could be sure they'd be interested in hearing offers for Myles. I hope that he gets a contract extension and that he finishes his career as a member of the Browns. I think he's a special, special defensive player, and I don't want him going anywhere. But we all know the reality of pro sports.
Do you think, and this is a little bit off, do you think the Browns learned a lesson with what happened with Baker Mayfield? Do you think there was a lesson to be learned there? About noise getting out, about trying to bring in someone else, or about trying to upgrade when you have someone that has had success or even mild success, and I think Baker had success while he was here, and he had injury too, and I also think Baker's just a different cat. Like I think he takes things very, very personal, and sometimes doesn't associate the business with the game, and that's okay. I don't have a problem with that because that's what makes Baker Mayfield.
It was well put
Baker
by you.
Mayfield,
well
right?
put by you.
So. And it's what drives him. It's what makes him the player that he is today. And he just got a nod for Pro Bowl, didn't he? For this year, I think he just got it because of injury. So I look at that and then I wonder, okay, do the Browns, did they learn anything that maybe they didn't know before? Especially ownership because of the way the Baker Mayfield thing went down. Because it wasn't pretty. Mm-hmm. It wasn't pretty at all. And, you know, the Browns sat there and were like, well, we got Deshaun Watson. This is going to work, even though they knew he was going to be suspended when he started. So they knew there was going to be a little bit of a pitfall to it, but and the whole storyline that was going along with what Deshaun was coming here. The baggage was not good, and Baker was like, all right, I'm out. Get me out of here. But Baker had to revive his career at two different teams before he finally found this place in Tampa where he's been able to settle in and have success. But I wonder sometimes when the front office makes moves for the Browns if they take some of that stuff into consideration. And, you know, you sometimes need to worry about the PR there with a Myles Garrett and wonder what it's going to look like in the future. You have to play it out before you make a decision on things, right?
I would think...
For certain players.
I would think there was not a whole lot to learn there. The only reason I say it, Andy, is because I think they had already decided they wanted to move on.
I don't know. I think initially they kicked the tires on Deshaun and thought about it. And I don't know that they were 100%. They weren't 100% on moving on because when Deshaun had said no to the Browns in the beginning, they wanted to patch things up with Baker. And Baker didn't want anything to do with them. Said, you had your chance. Now I see you later. Trade me. Get rid of me. Which I'll tell you, I don't know.
Which they didn't have to do.
All they had to do was
give him a new deal, slap a franchise tag on him, whatever.
And would he have gotten over it? That's the question. Again,
of course he would have.
Well, it goes back to the Mike Tomlin. We want volunteers, not prisoners. And I think he would have felt like he was a prisoner if they would have made him bring him back.
Yeah, until payday.
It's the same thing. But are they closer to contention? And I don't know if I think they are. If you hang on to Myles Garrett, you are.
I don't know how you can look at a 3-14 team and truly think you're closer to contention.
So what do they need then? And did they tank the end of the season to say, is that how you got to 3?
I don't think they tanked anything. I don't think they were good enough to win.
Well, they didn't.
The only thing would be you should have played Jameis. If you're trying to give your team the absolute best chance to win, it wasn't by playing DTR and Bailey Zappe.
Dan, are they closer? Because I know we talked a little bit about this before. Do you think that you're making a statement by hanging on to Myles Garrett?
I think you're making a statement that you're not going to tear this roster down. I think you're making a statement that you think that winning is not far away from where this organization currently sits. At least that's how I read it. I mean, it can't just be as simple as, we live in this binary world with this stuff where it's like you're either competing or you're in a toilet. Like, that's where you want to be. It's this binary world that everything is sitting in because it's easier to understand life that way. And so I think the Browns look at this and say, Myles Garrett brings us closer to the winning part. I want winning players. I want Hall of Famers. Let's go. And I think it tells you they want to rebuild that defense and get back to the speed that they had. And they want to rebuild that offense in this offseason because they think there's enough talent to make it work. That's what keeping Myles Garrett says. Moving on from Myles Garrett says, forget it, eject, let's go. I think they want to compete and they think they're right around the corner.
Clearly they want to compete and you're keeping Myles because you need a defensive end on the other side.
This is a team that went 1-31. I don't know that anything is clear sometimes. I mean, they know how to get back up in the draft.
Since then, Andy, they've won some games. Since then, they've actually put some things together. And I think they have a chance to compete next year. But to think we're right there, you were 3-14. To think you're right there doesn't mean you can't. Washington turned it around. What did Washington win the year before? 4 games?
Yep.
So,
again, that's going to be our litmus for everything.
Sure it is, but they're not the first team to do it, Andy.
It's not easy, that's for sure, and it doesn't happen that often.
Especially in a division where you're going up against Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow and
whoever Pittsburgh puts out there.
Because they seem to win.
Yes.
As long as it's not Kenny Pickett.
It's all the same, but do you think the Browns are close to Super Bowl contention with the roster they have? I find it difficult right now, but I do think hanging on to someone like Myles Garrett and not trading it away is something that says, okay, we feel like we can get there a little bit faster than maybe you do. 216-474-0092. Chris Rose also coming up in this hour. You know and love him from the Browns Radio Network. And today he is in Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl, where he's been for years after year after year. And now he's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hello, Mr. Andrew Siciliano.
Hello, gentlemen. Good morning. I'm coming to you live from the field at Hancock Whitney and the campus of South Alabama. And the day 2 of practice is underway with the Bismarck Key blasting behind me. So I apologize for the music.
Hmm.
Oh, baby, you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Guys on the practice field right there?
I do. Yeah, I'm sitting in the corner of the end zone. I have Arthur Smith standing in front of me, partially blocking my view. And
tell him to get all the way.
This is day 2 of practice, the national team. So the team coached by Mike Kafka and D.C. Browns D-line coach Jacques Césaire. Huh. They're out of the field right now. It's a little early day 2 install. Dylan Gabriel, a quarterback, checked in at 5'10.5", stunning people that he was. As small, you can never honestly trust school SID heights and weights. But 5'10.5", but honestly, he was the best quarterback here yesterday, hands down. I mean, he was spinning it. He was impressive.
Can you go give Jackson Dart a hug for us?
He's later. He's on the American team, which is on the field second, coached by Bubba Ventrone. Jalen Milroe is also on that team. So conveniently, or maybe intentionally,
yeah.
Bubba gets the 2 highest-rated quarterbacks here, and he gets to coach them all week. And, you get to see what these guys really can do. I know I've said this for years coming on from the Senior Bowl. It really is an invaluable tool for the teams that are coaching here because it's not just on the field. It's how does a player learn? How does the player take an install on Sunday and Monday and Tuesday and then actually put it into action on Wednesday and Thursday and then develop that into the game on Saturday? How do you lead in the room? Are you Are you polite to the support staff? Are you nice to the barista in the coffee shop down the street when every single person in that? No, I'm being dead serious.
I know you are. That's why I laugh.
It's a week-long interview.
That's why I laugh.
Every single person in this town right now is somehow affiliated with A, an NFL team, B, a college team, C, a scouting service. They're a former GM down here consulting. Everyone's got eyes on you. And, you know, this is great. This is a really good week.
So with that thought in mind, and you just laid it out, the teams get to learn so much, and that's the way that goes. Is that dangerous, Andrew? Because it's very easy to decide, oh my gosh, we just love this guy, when maybe his talent isn't worthy of where you're picking for what you need to pick. You know what I mean? Like you jump the gun because you're so pumped up about a guy. When he perhaps might not be the right guy to take.
Nah, I would look at it the other way, and it's never a bad thing to have too much information, right? And again, we've said this 100 times before. The draft is not just about football talent. These are HR decisions, personnel decisions. Like who do I want to hire to work with the people in my building? Do I think they get along with my coaches? Not just get along. Like, you know, do I like them personally? But like, do we think they're a fit for us? It's better to have more information than it is to have less information. I don't think, guys, I'll plant the flag right now. The number two pick in the draft isn't here in Mobile. It's just, you know, whether it's, you know, one of the top two quarterbacks or whether it's Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter or an offensive lineman, whomever you want, that pick probably isn't here. But there were 10 first-round picks here last year, 43% of the draft, 43%, 110 players. We're at the Senior Bowl last year. So it's not just about two. It's about 33. It's about all the other picks as well. You know, Ronnie Hickman and Jerome Ford and DeJuan Jones and, you know, go back to Wyatt Teller when he was a Bills pick, Joel Petonio, the Browns over the years. Last year, Mike Hall, Jamari Thrash. You've gotten tons of talent at the Senior Bowl. Heck, the Rams one year, I think Leslie took 7 guys from the Senior Bowl. So this is where the talent is. This is only a good thing.
Do you think for most people that when I'm trying to put this right, if you're a scout, okay, and you've been scouting these guys all season, does the Senior Bowl just solidify what you believed, or does it discredit when you put guys in a different kind of situation? Like, that's what I'm trying to if I'm a scout and I see a guy, I'm just wondering what it does.
Oh, it depends on the player. It's just more data points. Like, I was talking to a head coach yesterday. I was sitting here watching practice, and you know, it's one thing to see a quarterback on tape, but you know, you want to stand here on the field and actually see the way the ball comes out of his hand. Like, I know, you know, a buddy of mine is a scout and done it for years at the highest level. When he goes to a game, he doesn't wear team gear. He wants to go down to the field in just his basic Nike dry fit for the game. And especially watching a quarterback, just watch how he interacts with his teammates. Is he truly a leader? Is he engaged? Like, what is his pregame demeanor? Is he nice to the water boy? Things like that, right? You want to watch from afar, and you want to see people up close. You want to get to know people. I mean, that is only a good thing. The quarterbacks here are always the stories. The story guys, like Jalen Milroe, amazing human being, amazing athlete. I don't know that the passing game is refined. He had a couple of balls yesterday where he just goes, yikes. But, you know, I got a chance to talk to him, shake his hand, which didn't measure as much as some people thought it would. He's a great kid. He's a model.
Did you have a ruler in your hand?
No. He had a firm grip, and I joked him. I got the firm grip, buddy. We talked about the Ravens. You know, he admitted Monday for the very first time publicly, admitted that he actually hadn't. He intentionally kept it from people that he was a Ravens fan because his dad's from Maryland and they lived there like 1 year when he was a kid, but he grew up in Texas and his youth football team was the Ravens. So he became a Ravens fan, but he stressed to me, he does not hate the Browns. I said, okay, that's good. But do you hate the Steelers? And he laughed. He's like, no, I mean, I could, you know, but Jalen Milroe, I'd be stunned. He's not going to be the number two pick.
What'd you think of the Dillon Gabriel story from yesterday, throwing the ball almost 75 miles an hour? What'd you think of that?
Okay, so a lot of that by that Dove Kleinman, whoever the hell runs that account, garbage. That was just, listen, they put the numbers up on the screen. The way it's tracked here is different than at the combine. He's, I don't know, like 78. All you have to take, just take the context. He had the most zip on a pass yesterday more than, say, others. Okay, that's it. That's all I got to take from it. It's not that big of a deal. He throws a really nice ball, like a really, really, really nice ball. I got to see him in person this year. I did one of their games. He throws a pretty pass. He's not a big human being. Like, when he walked into our meeting room for NBC before that game in September, we all went, oh, wow, okay. Guy's not big. But hold on. He sat down, and you're like, okay, wow, I get it. Like, blown away by the dude. Blown away. And, like, he walked out, and my partner there, my color analyst, Michael Robinson, looked at me like, oh, that's an adult right there. So you're getting that, and he's much like Bo Nix. You know, he broke Bo Nix's record. He has 60-some career starts. Experience does matter. 5'10.5" also matters as well. So someone's going to take him. You know, they're not going to take him high because the size just does work against him.
So if a guy like that's out there, and you're the team sitting there with the second pick in the draft, and you're not going to use that on him, and you got a guy like Travis Hunter out there, or you got Abdul Carter, you got all these guys at other spots, and you have to win next year, it screams to me, go get a veteran and draft one of these kids and see if you can develop them while you're playing your veteran, and if your veteran happens to do well, he's your starter for the next 3 years.
It depends on who the veteran is. It depends on how much you're paying the veteran. Guys, there's no one right way.
No, there's not.
To do this.
No.
There really isn't. And just having a conversation coming over to the car. Kelsey Russo and I were having a conversation coming over the car here to practice today. Do you feel that organizationally you need to take a swing? Okay? Because you're not going to be picking two every year, God willing. So you have to take a swing at one of the guys who has a lot of talent, who you hope you can turn that talent into not only good play, but great play and a franchise savior. Like, are you willing to go? They're going to re-sign Myles Garrett, and I was sitting there when AB made his comments yesterday. Very much that looks to be the case, right? He's not going anywhere. Like, are you willing to, I don't want to say waste. Waste is far too strong. Spend another year of Miles prime, of Joel near the end, of Denzel in his prime, hoping that the guy you take at two is the right guy, okay? Or do you have to say, damn it, excuse my language, I'm sorry, we're here, we have to take a quarterback, period, and just hope. Like, what do you do? There's no right answer. There really isn't, because there just isn't a guy at the top of the draft like, okay, that's Andrew Luck. That's Trevor Lawrence. Those guys don't come along very often.
You take the guy you think might be long-term while you cover your you-know-what next year and bring in a guy you think can win 12 games for you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The answer is you draft someone and you sign someone. I don't think there's any doubt. That has got to be the plan. That's what you do. You draft someone and you sign someone. The question is, do you draft that person at two?
100%. Okay, I'm glad you said that because I was waiting for you. Yeah. Okay.
No. You absolutely have to do that. But you also have to look at the history, and we've talked about this before. Go get a quarterback in the third round. Show me the last third round quarterback that did anything. Because the third round quarterback becomes a second round quarterback. The second round quarterback becomes a first round quarterback, like Jackson Dart, for example. Is he a third round quarterback? Is he a second round quarterback? No, you know what? He's probably going to the 20s. If he has a good week this week, he might go in the 20s. It's just, that's just the way it goes. So tell me who that third round, because that third round quarterback is probably really 5 years ago a fifth round quarterback or a sixth round quarterback. Dak Prescott, 5. Kirk Cousins, 4.
Russell,
for various reasons.
Russell Wilson, 3.
Russell, sure.
You got to get really lucky.
You could find that guy.
Yep.
Desmond Ridder, 3. Right? I mean,
but
show
you
me the
can't
last.
Bank on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I kind of feel like we watched those two guys play in the national championship. The two guys you're describing, right?
Yeah. And look, I'm going to bang the table for Kyle McCord, too. Sorry, Buckeyes, man. I'm a Syracuse guy. He could spin it. Go watch the game tomorrow night on NFL Network, the East-West Shrine Bowl, because I guarantee you he's going to spin it. You know, I'm not saying the Browns want Kyle McCord. I'm just saying, do you go sign your veteran or trade for your veteran and then bring in that guy and then say he's probably not the guy, but maybe we see something and we roll with the veteran and then draft again next year? Everyone's like, oh, well, just not tank, but go get Arch. Okay, you know how hard it is to guarantee yourself the number one pick? Nobody wants to sit through. No one, like, everyone's gone. If this team is picking Arch Manning or in a position to pick Arch Manning in 2026, or I've had so many people say to me that, like, no one's here anymore.
No, nope.
You don't live through that anymore.
There'll be a new front office, there'll be a new coaching staff.
Yeah, and no one wants that. The ownership doesn't want that. The fans don't want that. I'm speaking for myself here. It's just, you can't do that. And, like, I will never forget sitting at dinner here in Mobile 10 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever it was, and I had a GM say to me at dinner, that guy at Clemson is worth tanking for next year. Hmm. You watch what happens next year. Teams are going to tank for that guy at Clemson. Okay. Well, he ended up going, what, 13?
12.
Right? 12, whatever it was, and had a really nice start to his career. Obviously, we know where we sit now, but that was a year out. A year from now, Arch might be the 12th pick. I doubt it. Right? He may stay in school. There's no guarantee he's going to even come out with the money that colleges pay now with all that extra cash. There's no guarantee he's going to come out. Like a year ago, are we all sitting here going, Quinn Ewers, top of the draft? Maybe some people were. I know I wasn't, but I know some people were. Well, now, like, Quinn Ewers is your day three guy now, right? A lot can change in a year. If you think one of these guys is the guy, then go get him.
Andrew, as always, we appreciate the conversation. Enjoy enjoy the trip, and we look forward to hearing what you have to say about the rest of the Senior Bowl as it progresses. Thank you.
I'm trying to – is this Moni Love? No, who's this? No, this is Salt and Pepper. Remember Salt and Pepper?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Assault with a Deadly Pepper, underrated album.
All right, we're spinning the hits with Andrew Siciliano. Thank you.
See you, buddy. Okay.
Peace. Yep. He loves his music. Andrew Siciliano giving us a little bit of a breakdown. How about a little bit more? I need more.
Man, there's so much that I agree with, and Ross and I are in lockstep. And then he says the name Daniel Jones, and I just
turns you off immediately.
Because here's the thing. People are going to use Sam Darnold, who was unplayable at points in New York and Carolina. They're going to use that justification this offseason to do some reckless things. I think any money into Daniel Jones feels like a reckless thing for me.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Ross was like, everyone on social media says this, and maybe that's just the carnival funhouse mirror that social media is, but do you get that same perception that so many people are like, you must take a quarterback at two? I mean, you talk to somebody every day that does that, so maybe it's a little skewed, but I don't see that at all.
I think like every other darn thing in this country, I think we've got two sides and like four people in the middle being like, it's not really a one or other thing. It's more, and I feel like I'm the person in the middle. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it's either you have to take a quarterback at two, of course you have to, or that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
And by the way, this is how this goes. Like, I went back and I was looking at some of the stuff from The Score last year in Chicago and their discussions around Caleb Williams versus Justin Fields, because I want to be like, that's a unquestioned at the time what many believed was the generational quarterback. I was like, was it like pulling teeth there too? And it really was. Like, that was like a hard sell for people that Caleb Williams was gonna be and should be the number one overall pick. Like, this is just how this thing works. You're never gonna get everybody across the board. But I think it's even a harder sell when so many people in the previous couple of days just want to tell you that this is the sixth best quarterback and it is what it is.
You know, you and I have talked about the quarterback du jour and who's the quarterback of the moment, who's the quarterback of the day. It needs to be like the crappiest or game either. Shedeur Sanders at two or Daniel Jones in a three-year deal. Jalen Milroe at 33 or Sam Darnold for $100 million.
Well, it goes back to the heart of the discussions we had about a month ago where it's like, you're not going to be happy with anybody, so what are we doing here?
Yeah, so for me, and I think this is where I'm trying to be humble. I don't think this, if you go in thinking there's only one way for this thing to work out, I think you're going to be amongst the masses that are not thrilled with what the Browns do. And I actually think you're more flexible. I tease you about the Shedeur stuff, And some of it's warranted, but mostly, like, you're more flexible than I think people are giving you credit for, because your thing is just take bites of the apple, right?
Right, right. And that's, I got a little agitated with the morning show today and listening to them, where Ken was like, he's so in Shador's camp, we just run up and take the card, and at least I'm having flexibility. It's like, that's not how that went at all. Like, if you've listened at all to what I've discussed, like, I'm Shador, I'm also Cam, but I'm very much take bites at the apple. Like, you have to prioritize the quarterback spot has been my main theme of all this. Now, I think Shador makes more sense for the Browns based off of fit and everything, but that's a different discussion too.
But I just think, like, okay, so Sam Darnold, Will Howard, my boy Taylor Elgers, I can get behind that, right?
With a strong jawline.
Yeah, strong jawline. Brigitte Nielsen is a mother figure. That's what I'm guessing. I don't know. I haven't done his 23andMe yet. But okay, so you've got...
That's a wild theory, by the way. It's like, we did your 23andMe.
Yeah, it turns out you're adopted.
This is the results. Let's talk about it.
Can you imagine?
Combine talk. Let's talk about it.
So I'm very lucky because everyone else, somebody else in my family has done, on both sides, has done the 23andMe.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't have to worry about the, hey, remember that guy? Yeah, he's not who you thought he was. There are families across America that every year there's a Donnybrook ensues because it turns out grandpa had two families or grandma liked more than just grandpa.
Listen, I did it. I did it. I was the person that jumped in and did it. Actually, I bought the test for my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was like, I don't want to do it. You're going to have to do it instead. And so I said, okay, fine.
So in looking back, the genealogy on my biological father's side, there's a dude. Dude, there's my, I think he's my great-great-grandpa, sired a child at 13.
Okay.
And the woman was 15.
Okay.
And there's a part of me that's like, yeah, darn right you did.
No.
Right?
No.
Well, that's a simpler time. That was like, back then, 13 was the new 30 back then.
I'm a proud papa.
But that goes a lot of different ways. And I just think, like, do you want to know your family's secrets? Do you want to know the thing that we shouldn't, like, do you want to know that? I'd love it. I love a little tea. Give me a little bit of that family tea.
Now, sometimes it freaks me out, though. Like, on Elisa's side, one of her great-grandparents, like, they only got together because her great-grandma's first husband got killed by a silo falling down.
Yeah.
And so, like, you hear that story, and you're like, wait a second, none of this exists if not for that silo? And that stuff freaks me out.
Why? Is it the butterfly effect? Do you start to play the game in your head about how different things would be?
Yeah, Lisa isn't here on planet Earth, if not for that silo that killed her great-grandma's first husband.
Or maybe she will.
Because she just stays with the guy that's the first husband until the end of time. Ergo, the great-grandpa could never find his way into the photo.
Well, I mean, that's assuming the great-grandpa, I mean, maybe she would still be here, but maybe she's like, it comes from a farming family with a lot of money. You never know.
What?
I tried to spin it in a positive way. Like they own like Cub Cadet or something like that. I was trying to turn it into a positive. We assume it in the negative.
No, no, but like it never happens. Like Elisa's never born. It's the whole everything doesn't happen.
Okay, theoretically.
You needed the great grandpa and the great grandma to be able to get together. That doesn't happen if the silo.
It sounded like grandma was still getting together with someone.
If the silo doesn't come into play, people were still going to be born. Yeah, but it wouldn't have been Elise. You see what I mean here?
They could still have this. She could have the same name. She could look very similar.
I never meet Elise. Then my daughter's also never. You see how this is? I don't want any of this info.
I think
it blows my mind.
All right, I'm just going to let sleeping dogs lie on this one because I realized I don't think I'm going to be able to get through on this one.
That's okay.
But where were we with the Browns?
So basically, we need to do a 23andMe for our Canadian football quarterbacks and find out where his great grandparent got hit by a silo.
There's a world in which I can accept Kirk Cousins, Shador. And that's your quarterback room. Like I'm trying to be as flexible as I possibly can, because I just it is a choose your own adventure, and you only have so much power within all of this if you're the Cleveland Browns. Now the good news is there's a connection there between the people in Minnesota and the Cleveland Browns, so there might be a connection there with Sam Darnold. And the things you want to do with quarterbacks, Sam fits in. But that can be said about Kirk Cousins and several other quarterbacks. Like, I think there are situations where you are very pigeonholed from the quarterback perspective. I don't think the Browns are, other than do you fit in Kevin Stefanski's offense?
No, the nice part about the situation that they're in is that we should, by May 5th, be able to say, okay, this is their plan, And it's exactly what they wanted, because you're going to be able to see through free agency or the draft which quarterback they like and go from there.
Let's go with Rich in Ashtabula. Are you dead set on a specific quarterback plan, or are you going to give the Browns a chance to kind of get multiple stabs at it this offseason?
As far as I'm concerned, the quarterback situation in college this year, I think, is very lackluster. I think they should try to go to a different route. I think we should get somebody to compliment Myles Garrett, and I think that somebody would be Jack Sawyer.
Where are you, Rich?
Real quick, are you working on are you a longshoreman right now?
No, sir.
Okay. What's that sound in the background? Are you shoveling?
Oh, shoveling makes sense.
No. No, that's the heater from my car.
Oh, okay.
That's the heater.
It's a heater. What are you driving, a car from 1951?
No, this is a 2024 Nissan Rogue.
I'd get that in the shop ASAP. That did not sound like a healthy car there. All right, sorry. So
you want Jack Sawyer in the first round?
Yeah, but I just don't like Jack Sawyer, too. I just think that's a bigger reach than Shedora, too.
How far do you think it'll be? What round do you think he'll go in?
I think he could be a potential first-round pick, but I think it's much more likely early second-round pick. Maybe the 33rd pick. Would you take that?
If he's available, would you take him?
And depending on the spot, Rich, we appreciate you. I think Jack Sawyer is his Shador to you, or how people perceive Shador to you, where it's just all roads lead back to Sawyer. I actually would kill for one of the defensive ends from Ohio State, either Tui Moloau or Sawyer, because they're bigger defensive ends. I don't know who's going to end up making the better pro. I did. This makes the second round pick a little rich for my blood, because the guy I'm going to compare him to was a third round pick. I kind of look at Jack Sawyer as Sam Hubbard. Sam's been kind of a consistent 5 to 8 sack guy in Cincinnati.
I've seen some pro comps on him as Sam Hubbard. That's the right read there.
Yeah. So I sent that to my little brother, because we were talking about Sawyer and Tui Moloau, and I'd made the comparison. And then like 3 weeks later, he sent me somebody's scouting report saying Sam Hubbard. And I was like, I look smarter in your eyes, and that's all that matters to me.
I think the 33 pick is even probably a reach for Jack Sawyer.
Yeah, it's interesting. People have kind of pushed several Ohio State players up the board.
Well, that's the March Madness effect of it all.
If it helps, I'm more comfortable with Jack Sawyer at 33 than I am at Will Howard at 33.
Well, I also keep getting the same idea that has become really out there in the past 48 hours or so, that basically any pick from 20 to 60 could be interchangeable.
Yeah, that's really... And well, what's so interesting about that is every team is also going to have a different 20 to 60.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's enough variance here that you could be talking about from team to team 10 different players in that. This definitely feels like, because we've talked so much about choose your own adventure, this definitely feels like a whoever survives chaos, which means a little bit of luck, a lot of bit of luck, is going to come out the winner of this draft. Right?
Like explain what you mean, whoever survives chaos.
What I mean is, there's so much variance between the middle of the draft, where the bulk of the draft is, that, like, okay, if you have a top six pick, you should hit on a really good player, but your board and the person next to you board is going to look so different. It's never felt more like, man, you really hope this one goes your way, but it could go poorly.
Okay, but you love these type of drafts if you're like a Howie Roseman. You know what I mean? Like, you love these drafts if you're
that's
that
type of guy. That's how the Kyle Hamilton... Okay, that's a Baltimore thing. But that's how Cooper DeJean falls to 53. That's how Kyle Hamilton for Baltimore goes to 14 when everybody knows he's a top five pick.
Right.
Or Linderbaum being the 24th or 25th
pick. But how many Browns fans believe you have an edge when you have Andrew Berry in that role?
Well, if we're making
I would imagine not many, though.
How about if we're making a trade down, maybe. Huh?
He's the king of the trade down.
He is. Are you anti-trade down? I can't remember.
It's not my preferred thing. I mean, I'm very pro take a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's how I see it. If you trade down though, and you get a bunch of different picks, like I'm not against the idea that you stockpile a bunch of picks and then you got 11 already. You have to have a lot of great players in this draft, and that's part of this draft that is not getting nearly enough conversation. Is the idea that people talk about a lot about the quarterbacks, but the draft in and of itself doesn't seem like a particularly great draft as a whole.
Yeah, unless you're talking tight ends, defensive linemen, or running backs.
And well, even with running backs, there's like 15 running backs. There's a bunch of different running backs. It's not like you have to be in the second round to grab one. Like, you're going to have an opportunity to get one.
So that's what's so interesting about this, specific to tight ends or running backs. Everyone's talking about those for the top 33 pick, either 2 or 33. And it's like, I watched Tyler Warren at Penn State. That kid's going to be a better pro because he's going to have more experienced quarterbacks than he has. He's going to be a better pro than he is in college. That kid could be a dominant tight end. I'm not spending a top 33 pick on him. I'm not going to be mad if they do because I think he is going to be a stud. I just think you have other bigger needs, and I think you can say the same thing about like a Luke Lachey or Fannin from BG in the late third round or early fourth round. But what's interesting about what you're saying is I am pro trade down. And I would like if the Raiders thing, because they have two seconds.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to 6, pick up another second, a fourth rounder, and next year's first. To me, that's a huge win. You will have to move off of a couple. You're going to have like 5-6 round picks. You are going to have to move off of a couple of those. There's only so many 6 round picks that you can evaluate.
You can't have like a 15 person draft class.
I did it. My fix for the Browns, but it's because when I went to then trade out of the 6 round picks, they're like, I'll give you a 7th rounder next year. I'm like, that's not how I'm not going to trade. I'm not going to sacrifice that kind of value. I'm not that kind of GM. 216-474-0092. Where are you in your choose your own adventure for the Browns quarterback? Ross Tucker says, don't take a quarterback. At 2, he doesn't like that for the Browns. In case we missed it, coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. The Andrew Berry quote yesterday from the Senior Bowl saying that he is confident that Deion Sanders will be fine with Shedeur Sanders playing for the Browns. And I do think, you know, it's been the story that won't die. And I don't know that this quite put it to bed, but I do think for some Browns fans, just hearing Andrew Berry, it's like the Myles Garrett thing. Like, Andrew's saying from his side of things, there's nothing I would do to trade Miles. The wiggle room left is when Miles signs the contract or doesn't sign the contract this offseason. Like,
yeah.
Miles controls a part of this, but I still think a lot of fans heard the Miles stuff yesterday and said, well, that's all I need to hear. Miles is here, and I feel good and secure about that. I kind of feel the same way about the Andrew Berry stuff. Like, I'm glad to hear it. It puts at least a notch in the column of, hey, they think they're cool to take Shedeur if they want him at 2. But until Deion Sanders says it, I don't know we can take it to the bank.
That's the missing piece there. Like we don't know. Is it because he talked to Deion, or is it just because he just doesn't care what Deion thinks?
Yeah. Well, and...
but we just don't have that answer.
Which, by the way, I think Ross is on to something, and it's something that I've wondered multiple times. Like, how much power... I mean, okay, there is power in there's two quarterbacks everybody thinks should go in the top 10. We're talking scarcity. We're talking about not choosing a quarterback in the draft via fear or via desperation that I said earlier in the show. So I'm sure he has some power just because of quarterback scarcity this year. But at the end, don't you just want your kid to get drafted and you want him a chance? Like, you want to start that clock ticking towards the second contract?
From that part of it, I thought Ross was 100% right. Like, I believe that the entire time. That's why it's never made sense to me when people are like, Deion's the big roadblock here. It's like, no, I don't think he's the roadblock that anybody thinks that he is.
Now, do I think there's another part of this that I think is really interesting? And it is about Deion's role in Shedeur's career.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Well, does it become like what John Morant's dad was? Or is he one of these, and I don't know that he's capable
looks like
of this.
Usher?
His dad, yeah, it kind of does look
like
Usher.
If you look like Usher, you could clean up in this country for the rest of your life.
We could have gone to LeVar Ball. There's more obvious sports dads we could have gone to, but John Morant's dad always stays in my mind. Like, he is just a...
because he looks like Usher.
He's often unhinged, and I feel like not enough people discuss how unhinged he is sometimes. But, like, yeah, like, what's your role going to be? And I do wonder, does Deion have the capability of just stepping back in the shadows? I think if things are going great, you're not going to have to worry about it in the slightest bit. And I know what people are like, well, yeah, but when things are going poorly, he's obviously going to step in. It's like, yeah, That could be a reality. If things go poorly, Deion would want to have control over that. But at that point in my mind, things just went so far off the rails, then there might not be anything redeeming from that anyway.
I think one of the genius things about Deion, and I do think he doesn't get enough credit for how he constantly keeps. I mean, Ross was talking about every time we do anything on the podcast about Shedeur Sanders, the numbers are insane.
Which, by the way, Ross, if you want to do a Shedeur Sanders podcast, I'm in.
Yeah, you will. Yeah,
I'm 100% in.
I think you're on the positive side, and he has.
Text Ross. If he wants to do a Shedeur Sanders podcast, exclusively Shedeur, I'm his man.
So I'm the Shedeur podcast pimp? What do I get out of this?
I'm not going
to
text him.
I get to broker the deal, and then I'm just out in the cold. I'm like Johnny Depp and Blow. Well, you're just going to cut out the middleman?
According to Ross, we would make all sorts of money doing this podcast, so we'd give you 10%, something along those lines. I'm not sure.
Until Shedeur didn't work out in the NFL. However,
well, that's the thing. That's the thing. He was like, oh, you want it for the ratings. Clearly you want it for the ratings. It's like, buddy, if this doesn't work, what is 6 months of good stuff with Shedeur going to do for me? If it doesn't work, what everyone should want is the Browns to be good for as long as the Browns can possibly be good.
Yes.
That's the end goal. He's like, oh, well, Philadelphia. Yeah, don't you think Philadelphia fans are much more with the ratings and talking about how great everything is when they're in their second Super Bowl over 4 years?
Yeah.
Instead of like the one off season they got to complain about Chip Kelly? Like, give me a break, buddy.
I think the genius of Deion is so much. There's almost mythology. He says so many things, and he keeps Colorado, and he keeps himself and his kid in the headlines that almost some of the stuff is just like mythology, right? He's created his own canon when it comes to, you know, the Book of Deion. And that is a skill. Like he's had that going all the way back to when he was a college kid and he was a two-way player playing baseball and football. And like he has willed a lot of stuff by just being Deion Sanders.
He's the Chris Jenner of sports.
But the thing in the Book of Deion that I do not in any way buy is the idea that Deion doesn't want to follow Shedeur to the NFL. I can understand that Deion is content at Colorado, but people who like making headlines, they always want a bigger stage. They do. And I think Deion understands that there are limitations at Colorado. And while you have Colorado as a 9-win team and a bowl team, everything's going to be gravy because that is the ceiling for Colorado football, right? The expectations are not to win a championship. Yeah, you have a 6-win team and you're doing the same things. It's gonna peeve some people off. So I think Deion's understanding that he's got a finite amount of time, especially he's a little bit older too, I think mid-50s. I think he understands he's got a finite amount of time to get back into the NFL. So I think he does.
How does this play out for him, though? Because if Shedeur goes to the NFL and is everything that Deion tells us he is, you're not getting that coaching job.
I think that's a sticky wicket. I just know that it would not surprise me if eventually Deion wanted some role in wherever Shedeur went. Whether that's as a head coach, whether that's if it doesn't work out at Colorado long run, 2 years down the road, he's out of a job, and whether he goes into like almost a senior assistant role in the front office, like part of what drafting Shedeur is, I don't think it's now because you don't have a head coaching opening, you're past the fact. But do I think that if like 2 years down the road, Kevin Stefanski gets fired, and this is a hypothetical, I'm not predicting this, but if it plays out like that, do I think if Shedeur plays well enough that Shedeur might ask the team, hey, can you interview my dad at the very least? Yes. I do think that's...
For what?
For the head coaching job.
Why would he want to upset the apple cart that way? Like, if things are going really well, why would he want to do that?
No. It's if he plays well, but for some reason Kevin Stefanski gets fired, it would not surprise me if Shedeur said, hey, my dad has interest in this job, and I'd like him to be a part of the organization if possible.
I look at it like if Shedeur is doing well, then Stefanski's job is secure in my eyes.
Well, but have a bad season, right? You can have the Joe Burrow, right, where you play like an MVP, you're a 500 team, and that costs you your job.
I guess I just think higher of Stefanski than I do Zach Taylor. I mean, everything's possible, though. I'm not gonna dismiss that idea. And if that's what it ended up being, I just think out of the obvious likelihoods, I would put that one in a completely separate category, only because I just don't see that happening.
I think as long as Shedeur is a Cleveland Brown, if that's what comes to fruition, I think there will be a chance that Deion becomes a member of the organization in one way or another. I think that's something you have to actively, if you're Andrew Berry, I think that's something you have to really – it's not the reason why you do or don't make the decision, but it's something that is – it's got to be part of your thought process long term.
I think you just have to get. Would he just be tired of the college game at that point? Because Colorado will have him there for as long as he wants to be there.
No, I think I don't think he's already tired. I think he wants to be in the NFL. I think the Dallas thing proved that. I know that there was some interest in the Vegas stuff. I think that's been well reported by this point. I think if anybody winks, it could be the worst job in the NFL. What do you think the worst job in the NFL is?
Right now, the Saints.
It doesn't have to be open. What's the worst job in the NFL? Factor in ownership, factor in the state of the roster, any of it.
No, let's put the Saints there. It's a really bad job.
I guarantee you, if the Saints decided that they want to interview Dion would go full force to get the job. I think the NFL as a head coach is where he wants to be. Now, in the book of Dion, he said he doesn't want to. I don't believe it. Dion is a big personality. He likes the light. The brighter the lights, the better for him. And no offense to Colorado, the lights can only be so bright in Colorado, and it's a slippery slope. Winning 9 games now in Colorado, you're a hero. You win nine games 3 years down the road, the bar will have changed.
He just also hasn't done enough to warrant I get to go to the NFL because I want to go to the NFL.
That's been the problem
with Dion the entire time. He thinks he's done enough to get there. He's not done anything close to enough to get there.
But you know this.
Hence why he didn't get the Cowboys job. Hence why he didn't get the Raiders job.
This is the reality distortion field. You know this. NFL owners are as susceptible as you and me and is anybody, any common fan out there, to what is bright, glitzy, and exciting. And I really do think, just because he didn't get the Cowboys or Raiders job, well, it's the first cycle he's been mentioned in with the head coaching jobs. This thing's going to be normalized. If he keeps winning at a specific rate, 8, 9, 10 wins a season, putting guys into the NFL, I really do think the Dion conversation is going to persist.
You brought up the Joe Burrow scenario, right? Where if he has a Joe Burrow-like season and he becomes essentially what that situation was with the Bengals.
Shador.
Yeah, I'm as a Browns fan, if like that's your biggest fear, by the way, that ultimately we have a spot where he becomes basically Joe Burrow and is so good, but the team isn't winning because your coach isn't as good. We won, guys. We won. If that becomes the discourse, we won. If he becomes basically Joe Burrow and what that season is, congratulations to us.
I think
if he's the type of quarterback that can actually call his shot and who his head coach is, congratulations, we've won.
I mean, there've been okay quarterbacks that get to call their shot. The Browns are not seen as a strong organization. They're not seen as a weak organization. But I don't think we should just discount the idea. And I think it's important to note, like, if you told Browns fans right now, today, hey, you're going to draft Shador and he's going to be really, really good. And you're going to be able to be kind of on the fringe of competition. Maybe eventually, a couple of years down the road, you are a Super Bowl contender. But 2 years down the road, Dion becomes your head coach. If I could Nostradamus that into, and say this is what's going to happen,
yeah,
I think there'd be a fair amount of people who would step back. Even on the idea of Shador as a franchise quarterback.
Like living up not only to the expectations he has now, but and then some, obviously. Congratulations to us.
I think we have
a franchise quarterback, and we're in a good spot.
I think it is the bigger issue for... I think Dion will always remain a bigger issue for Browns fans than Shador, and a lot of the knocks on Shador are because of Dion. 216-474-0092. Billy in the Falls, you stick there. Do you need to hear Deion Sanders say he's okay with Shador to the Browns? And do you think if you draft Shador, eventually Deion Sanders will be a part of this situation? And Zach Jackson on the not one plan at quarterback, but maybe two plans at quarterback in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.